to another edition of Pecudos. Today we have Miriam Beckens from Oxford to talk to us about completeness results for graphical formatting process languages.
Hello, and thank you for having me. As I said, I'm from the University of Oxford. I'm in the Department of Computer Science there in the Quantum Group, and I work with Bob Kirke. And I'm particularly interested in graphical languages that arise from categorical quantum mechanics. And the reason I like these graphical languages is, for one thing, because I find them a lot easier to understand at sort of a glance than algebraic notations where people just write everything down in a line and it takes a long time to kind of look at it and figure out what's actually going on. And the other reason I like graphical languages is that it's possible to automate computations in them. So the languages that I'm talking about, they aren't just alternative notations. They have their own graphical rewrite rules that allow you to derive computations in the graphical formalism without having to translate back into matrices. And so in this talk, I'm going to talk a bit about graphical languages generally, and then I'm going to introduce a specific one, which is called the ZX calculus, which is the language that I work with the most. And I'm going to tell you about some completeness results for this language. And what I mean by completeness here is that the fact that you can use these graphical rewrite rules to derive any equality that you could also derive using matrices. So the graphical formalism is just as powerful as any other formalism that you could use in order to study these quantum processes. First, a bit of motivation for the entire thing. So a graphical quantum process language that most of you are probably familiar with is the quantum circuit notation. So we have here a quantum circuit made up of some unitaries applied on two different qubits. Then we have a control NOT gate and a Pauli Z operator, another control NOT gate. So the reason people like quantum circuit diagrams is because, yeah, it's easy to see at a glance what's going on. If we had the equivalent operation written down algebraically, it would take a while to kind of piece out which operations are applied to which qubits, which ones come first, which ones come later. Whereas in the graphical notation, because we have two dimensions and we can kind of split up parallel composition and sequential composition, it's just a lot easier to see what's going on. Another thing is that there are certain equalities that we have to put into the algebraic formalism by hand, which again become trivial in the graphical notation. So for example, if we look at these first four unitaries, in the algebraic formalism, there are at least two different ways of writing down what's going on here. So we can either do the parallel composition first and then the sequential composition, or we could do the sequential composition first and then the parallel composition. But in the graphical formalism, it's all just, they both correspond to exactly the same diagram. So it's kind of an extra level of complexity that we don't need to worry about. So as I said, the graphical languages that I'm interested in aren't just alternative notations. They also come with rewrite rules. And so I'll quickly explain, using this example of quantum circuits, what I mean by rewriting. So if we look at this combination of a control NOT gate followed by a Pauli Z, then we know, if we go back to the matrices, that that's the same as if we did the Pauli Z first and then did the control NOT. So in a way, we have this equality between the two quantum circuits down here. And graphical rewriting means we take this equality between diagrams, and we see that one half of the equality matches what we have in the diagram up here. And so we just cut that out and paste in the other side of the equality instead. So that's a graphical rewrite. And so as you see, we can do this graphical rewriting on quantum circuit diagrams. But the thing is that there aren't any sort of widely taught rewriting rules for quantum circuit diagrams, which means that a lot of the time when people do computations in quantum circuit diagrams, their papers end up having long appendices where they rederive all these equalities. And no one's ever gone and actually worked out sort of some basic set of rewrite rules that all the others could be derived from. So in theory, someone could go and do that for this quantum circuit notation. But in the notation that I'm going to talk about, the ZX calculus, is kind of, it's a bit like quantum circuit notation, but it's also more powerful in other ways. And because of the categorical underpinning, it just comes with some graphical rewrite rules that follow from the category theory that are already inherent to it, that don't need to be kind of derived from other things. And that's why I study graphical languages that come from category theory instead of just focusing on the quantum circuit notation. So the outline of my talk is going to be the following. I'll first give a bit of background, a very quick introduction to categorical quantum mechanics, but don't worry, I won't actually go into the category theory at all. I'll talk about graphical languages in general, and then I'll introduce the ZX calculus specifically. Then the main part of the talk is going to be the completeness results, and those are for different fragments of the ZX calculus. There's one for stabilizer quantum mechanics, which presumably most of you are familiar with. So I'm then going to talk a bit about Speckens-Tobit theory, and which is a local hidden variable theory, which is very similar to stabilizer quantum mechanics. And I'll show that the graphical calculus for this toy theory is basically, it's similar again in the same way to stabilizer quantum mechanics. And it's similar enough that the completeness proof for stabilizer quantum mechanics carries over to the toy theory. And lastly, I'm going to give a very quick overview over the completeness proof for the single qubit Clifford plus T group, which is particularly interesting because that's an approximately universal group for single qubit operations. And as I'll talk about later, the ZX calculus is not complete in general, so it's not complete for an exactly universal set of operations, but it is complete for this approximately universal set. And in fact, in practical applications, a lot of the time we don't have access to exactly universal operations anyway. So having this completeness result for an approximately universal group does give us a lot of power in terms of doing computations graphically for real existing problems. Finally, I'm going to give an outlook and talk about some further ideas for either work in progress or for things that I want to look at in the future. So categorical quantum mechanics is the study of systems and processes and how they compose. So processes are always characterized by a starting system and a target system. These can be simple systems, as in the examples up on the slide, or they could be tensor products of other basic systems. And graphically, we denote processes by boxes and systems by lines. And these diagrams are generally read from the bottom to the top. So there is also a trivial system, which isn't written as a line at all. And that allows us to express things like state preparation. So a state preparation is actually a map from the trivial system into a system of whatever type we want to prepare. So here, this map psi is a preparation of a state of the system A. And as I said, the interesting thing in categorical quantum mechanics is how these maps compose. So graphically, if we have two maps that happen in parallel, then we just write them side by side. So that denotes the tensor product of them. And if we have maps that happen sequentially on the same system, then we just plug the inputs and outputs together. Obviously, in that case, we have to make sure that the system types match up. So if we prepared a system of type A, we couldn't then apply this map G to it because that's a map that acts on systems of type C and D. But the map F, which does take a system of type A as its input, that can be applied to the system we've prepared. And in fact, this graphical way of reasoning, of writing things down, is provably equivalent to the algebraic reasoning. This is a slightly different result to the completeness that I'm going to talk about later, but kind of gives it this rigorous underpinning, the fact that from this equivalence, that's what kind of gives us the confidence to actually look at graphical calculi and prove completeness results for them. Right, so now the ZX calculus, which is the language that I'm going to talk about for the rest of this talk, it's a graphical language for pure state qubit quantum mechanics. So all the systems that we're looking at are qubits, and hence we don't need to label any of our lines because they all have the same type. And we don't need to worry about which lines we're plugging together because they are all of the same type. And rather than having sort of different boxes for our maps, we now just write them as nodes. And there are three different types. So we have these red and green nodes, which are called spiders because they kind of have many legs. And they can have any numbers of inputs and outputs. And they also have an angle associated with them, which is called the phase. And we have these yellow nodes, which are called Hadamard nodes. And the reason for that is that these green nodes denote maps in the computational basis, and the red nodes are maps in the plus-minus basis, and the Hadamard nodes map between the two. So these double square brackets here, those are the kind of maps that take us from the diagrams into matrices.
So these are non-unitary maps?
Yeah. I mean, depending on the number of inputs and outputs, if we just have one input and one output, then they're unitary, but in general, they're not. Right. So now a quick high-level overview over the rules of the calculus. I obviously don't expect you to remember all of those. The first thing is that in the current formalism, we're doing our computations up to scalar factor. So we're ignoring non-zero scalar factors. And to indicate that, I'm now going to write equalities in matrices with this dot on top to say that it's all up to scalar factor. The second important sort of implicit rule is the fact that only the topology of our diagrams matters. So we can move things around, we can bend lines, as long as the overall, like the way the different nodes are connected remains the same, and as long as the phase labels remain the same. And then we have this set of, nearly a dozen or so graphical rewrite rules, which are of the type that I talked about at the beginning. So the way we use those is by we identify one side of an equality in the diagram and then kind of cut that out and paste in the other side of the equality instead. Right. Now, this talk is about completeness, but there are a couple of related concepts, and people tend to get them mixed up, so I'm going to give a quick run through all of them. The first one, which you're probably familiar with, is universality, which is this idea that we can express any operation in this new formalism. And in fact, the ZX calculus is universal, which we can see by looking at certain operations that allow us to translate circuit diagrams directly into the ZX calculus. So we have kind of the zero state and the zero effect, which corresponds to a post-selected measurement in the computational basis. We obviously have the Hadamard node being the usual Hadamard operator. These green nodes with one input and one output, those are just the usual phase gates. And this combination of one red and one green node corresponds to controlled knot operation. And so we have like a horizontal edge between the two here because it doesn't actually matter whether kind of we do the green operation first and then the red one or the other way around. So we might as well just write it in a symmetric way. The next is the concept of soundness. So soundness means that all the equalities we derive using the rewrite rules have to be true when we translate them back into matrices. And it's fairly easy to check that the ZX calculus is sound by just looking at all the rewrite rules and translating the left-hand side back into matrices and the right-hand side, and then checking that they match up to scalar factor. So we have a calculus that's both universal and sound. And now for completeness. Completeness is kind of the converse of soundness. So completeness means that we can derive all the equalities that are true, where true here means that we can derive them using matrices. And unfortunately, the ZX calculus for general pure qubit quantum mechanics is not complete. That's because of the Euler decomposition of arbitrary single qubit unitaries. So we know that a single qubit unitary can always be written as a sequence of three kind of phase rotations in two different bases. And the green and red nodes in the ZX calculus are just rotations in two such different bases. So in matrices, given any unitary, we can always find angles alpha, beta, and gamma such that this equality on the left holds. But we can't necessarily always derive that equality just using the rewrite rules of the ZX calculus. So this might seem a bit confusing because I've said I'm going to talk about completeness results and now I've just said that the ZX calculus is incomplete. But in fact, if we restrict our phases, so rather than allowing arbitrary angles, we just allow some smaller set, then the Euler decomposition rule doesn't hold anyway. And therefore, we can still derive completeness results for these restricted fragments. And obviously, that's not quite as nice as having a completeness result for the fully universal calculus. But in many practical applications, we are mainly interested in stabilizer quantum mechanics, or we're just interested in approximately universal sets of operations anyway. So that's OK. Do you have a question?
I think I just missed something basic. Why doesn't that just become a rewrite rule and then lets you get...
Yes. So this unitary, if we were in the ZX calculus, that would also be written as some sequence of some diagram in terms of red and green nodes and possibly Hadamards. And so it's not at all obvious what kind of rewrite rules we'd have to add in order to be able to derive all these kinds of inequalities, And in fact, the people who derived this incompleteness results conjectured that we might have to add an infinite number of new rules that might not even be finitely generated in order to be able to derive all the possible equalities that involve sort of Euler decomposition of this type. So completing the overall calculus, while it would be a nice idea in principle, is probably not feasible.
So what counts as a new rule? I mean, so like go back to the previous thing. So you have this one in the upper left corner where you have alpha beta goes to alpha plus beta.
Yes.
That's just one new rule.
So that's one rule. I mean, in this case, it's kind of actually an infinite family of rules because we can have arbitrary numbers of inputs and outputs here.
Yeah, so that's the question. I mean, you could say, well, there's an infinite family of rules of you rewrite U as its Euler decomposition.
Yeah. So in fact, for these spider rules, there is a finite, fairly small set of rules that allow you to derive the spider rules. So in theory, we could replace this family of spider rules by just, I think it's a set of five or six rules that when you combine them, allow you to derive these spider laws, and that are each, one rule about spiders with fixed numbers of inputs and outputs. But it's just easier and more obvious to kind of think of them as these spiders rather than looking at the underlying rules.
There's two parameters there, right? One is the number of inputs and outputs, but one is also the alpha and beta.
Yeah.
And I can see kind of how you can break down into smaller numbers of inputs and outputs.
Yeah.
How would you get?
So alpha and beta, those are just parameters that are allowed to vary. So I guess in a way this is still like even in the other case it's still an infinite family of rules because we still have these arbitrary parameters. Yeah. But they're kind of again it's just. Because they sort of combine in this nice way, it's a finitely generated family of rules. You can write it down as just this one equality.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way as saying there's some formula that goes from U, the 2x2 matrix. So
yeah,
you have four entries there, so those Euler angles. But that's more complicated, obviously, than just addition, but. Somehow that doesn't count as just one rule, or
no. So I mean, we'd want the if we're looking at the Euler angles, we'd want the unitary on the left hand side of the equality to also be expressed as a ZX calculus diagram, and because there are so many different ways of writing things as ZX calculus diagrams, it's just not straightforward to find kind of any small or finitely generated set of rules that would then allow you to derive any of the Euler decompositions.
So let me just. If we don't have any unitaries written down, we start with the diagram, we replace all unitaries with some Euler decomposition, and then we want to think about completeness within kind of that scenario. Is it complete or not?
No.
No, okay.
Yeah, so I don't know the paper reference off by heart, but basically in the paper where people showed this incompleteness result, they came up with a specific unitary. And then wrote that as in an Euler angle decomposition, and then squared it, combined it with itself, and then said this new unitary needs to also have an Euler decomposition of just three nodes, and then showed that you can't derive that within the ZX calculus.
Got it. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, so it's difficult or possibly impossible to complete the universal ZX calculus. But we can still derive these completeness results for restricted fragments. which is what I'm now going to move on to. So firstly, the completeness result for stabilizer quantum mechanics. I assume you all know what stabilizer quantum mechanics is, but here's a quick refresher. And in the ZX calculus, this phase gate with phase I is just a green node with phase pi by 2. And then we have the Hadamard and the control not gate, which I already had on a previous slide. So to restrict the ZX calculus to stabilizer quantum mechanics, all we need to do is to restrict the phases to be integer multiples of pi by 2. And in fact, if we do that, that gives us exactly stabilizer quantum mechanics. So now in explaining the completeness proof for this, I'm first, again, going to give some kind of background information that I'm going to build up on. And sort of to give you a quick overview, this completeness proof is a sort of normal form theorem. So I'm going to show that all stabilizer diagrams can be written in a simplified form, which I call a GSLC diagram. And then I'm going to show that if you have two things that are in this GSLC form, you can always, if they're equal, you can show that within the ZX calculus using rewrite rules. And therefore, you can rewrite any diagram into any other diagram that's equal to the one that you started with. So this GSLC stands for graph state with local Clifford operators. So first, a bit about graph states. Graph states are states that kind of, whose entanglement structure is modeled on a mathematical graph. And therefore, it's not too surprising that they have a particularly nice representation in this graphical language. So the way a graph state is prepared is by, for each vertex in the graph, you take a qubit and you prepare it in the plus state. And then for each edge in the graph, you apply a control Z operation between the corresponding qubits. So in the ZX calculus, that means that for each node in the graph, we have a green node with one output. So that corresponds to preparing the qubits in the plus state. And then for each edge, we have an edge with a Hadamard node on it. And that corresponds to doing these control Z gates. So clearly, given a graph, it's very easy to write down the corresponding graph state diagram in the ZX calculus. So the reason graph states are so interesting is because they play a central role in stabilizer quantum mechanics. So in fact, any stabilizer state can be prepared by first preparing a graph state and then only doing local operations, local Clifford operations on that graph state. And furthermore, the equivalences between graph states and the local Clifford operations are very easy to characterize using this kind of notion from graph theory called local complementations. Local complementations themselves are a little bit tricky, so I'm going to explain them using an example. If we local complement about some vertex V in the graph, that means inverting the subgraph generated by the neighborhood of that vertex. So if we start with vertex 3 in this graph below, the neighborhood of that vertex is 2 and 4, and inverting the subgraph generated by that neighborhood means we toggle all the edges amongst those vertices. So in this case, we add an edge between vertex 2 and 4. And sequence of local complementations means we do multiple in a row. So if we now apply another local complementation about this vertex 2, its neighborhood consists of all the other vertices in the graph. And so we toggle all the edges among those, which means we remove the edge between 3 and 4, and we add new edges 1 and 3 and 1 and 4. So that's what local complementations do on a graph. And this is kind of one way we can figure out whether graph states are equivalent under these local operations. So these local complementations are something that can be derived from the rewrite rules of the ZX calculus. So if we have some graph state G, which I've just drawn as an ellipse here because we don't really care about its structure, and then we have the graph that we get from applying a local complementation about vertex V, and we note that by G star V, then in the ZX calculus, Ross Duncan and Simon Padry showed that the following equality holds, where you have a red pi by 2 operator on the vertex V, and you have green minus pi by 2s on all of the neighbors, and vertices that aren't adjacent to V don't have any change. So again, as an example, if we take this graph state here and we do a local complementation about the third qubit, so for one thing, what it does to the graph state is it removes that edge because that's what happens when we invert the neighborhood, the subgraph generated by the two neighbors here. And then also we get a red pi by 2 operator on this third qubit, and we get green minus pi by 2s on its neighbors. And this one, because it's not adjacent to the third qubit, doesn't have any change. So given this stuff, I defined a special type of ZX calculus diagram, which I called GSLC diagram for graph state and local Clifford operators. So that basically does exactly what it says on the tin. We have a graph state, and then we just apply arbitrary local Clifford operators, so single qubit Clifford unitaries, to all of the outputs. And so these GSLC diagrams are the class of diagrams that are mapped back to themselves under local complementations. So if you have some GSLC diagram, you apply a local complementation, you always get another GSLC diagram back. And then furthermore, I've showed that any stabilizer state diagram in the ZX calculus can be rewritten into GSLC form. And the way that proof works is by decomposing the diagram into basic elements. So we can decompose all the spiders into ones that have at most three legs. And then we have, obviously, all the single qubit Clifford unitaries as well. And then given any of those basic elements, we can show that if we apply it to a GSLC diagram, the result can always be rewritten back into GSLC form. So by induction, I've shown that any stabilizer ZX calculus diagram that doesn't have any inputs can be rewritten into this GSLC form. Now, we know from standard stabilizer theory that all equalities between graph states are generated by these local complementations. And therefore, by soundness, all equalities between GSLC diagrams are generated by local complementations. And therefore, we already know that we can derive any equalities between GSLC diagrams just by trying out all the possible different local complementations. But I've shown that, in fact, we can do better. And there exists a terminating algorithm that if we give it two GSLC diagrams, it will rewrite them to be identical, reasonably effectively. And if they aren't equal to start with, it will just stop at some point. And it's easy to check whether two diagrams are identical or not. So if it stops and they're not identical, we can figure that out quickly. And if it's managed to rewrite them to be identical, then because all our rewrite rules are invertible, that gives us a sequence of rewrites that shows that transforms the one of the original diagrams into the other one just by inverting some of them.
Sorry, so I have two questions.
Yeah.
So first of all, the Elliott et al. Result that you're citing there, that's the graph state equivalence algorithm.
Yes.
Okay. So the second question is, you said that it's easy to tell if two diagrams are identical.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems kind of similar as a problem, though, to graph isomorphism. I mean, so if you have two diagrams where the nodes are not really labeled, which seems like the case here, right?
Well, what you do have in this case is you have the outputs, and the outputs are in a fixed order. Uh-huh. And each node in the underlying graph is connected to exactly one output.
Okay.
So therefore, yeah, it's not as hard as graph isomorphism because your nodes in the graph are in a fixed order.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. So because of this, the ZX calculus is complete for stabilizer state diagrams. So if I'm given a stabilizer state diagram and another one, I can, and they correspond to the same matrix, I can always rewrite one into the other. Obviously, not all stabilizer operators are states. So what am I going to do about operators that do have inputs? And this is where map state duality comes in, which is also known as the Choi-Jung-Minkowski isomorphism. So in our graphical language, the way we map, we kind of implement map state duality is by just bending inputs around to become outputs, or conversely, bending outputs around to be inputs. And so if we're given some arbitrary operator A, we can kind of bend all its inputs to become outputs, and then show that that's equal to some state B, and that's equivalent as showing that the original operator A is equivalent to the state B with corresponding outputs bent back into being inputs. So therefore, all the stuff that we've done for stabilizer states so far actually also applies to general stabilizer operators. And so my overall completeness proof works as follows. If I'm given two arbitrary stabilizer diagrams on the same number of inputs and outputs, I kind of bend all the inputs into being outputs. I then bring them into GSLC form and apply this comparison algorithm. If that yields a pair of identical diagrams, that means that by inverting some of the rewrites, I can rewrite one of the states into the other state. And then by bending outputs back into inputs, that's the same as being able to transform the one of the original diagrams into the other one. And obviously, if the two aren't equal and if the comparison algorithm doesn't give us a pair of identical diagrams, then that's not an equality we want to derive in the first place. And yeah, more details are in the paper that's on the archive. Right, so that was the completeness proof for stabilizer quantum mechanics. And I'm now going to compare that to a similar graphical calculus that I've constructed for Speckan's toy theory. First, for those of you who don't know the toy theory or have forgotten about it, a brief introduction. So Speckan's toy theory is a local hidden variable theory, which nevertheless has many properties that are normally considered quantum. So you can have entanglement in the toy theory and teleportation, remote steering, and things like that. And in fact, structurally, it's very similar to stabilizer quantum mechanics. So kind of the number of different operations you can have on a toy bit system is the same. And also the way they compose is not exactly the same, but very similar. So the way that the toy theory works is by restricting the knowledge of any observer. So while the system is in some specific hidden state, which is called the ontic state, the observer never knows exactly which ontic state it's in. Instead, the observer only has sort of a set of ontic states that the system might be in, and that's the epistemic state, the state of knowledge. So in the categorical formulation of Speckan's toy theory, or rather the pure fragment of the toy theory, because we're just looking at pure states here, it's been shown that the only difference between the toy theory and stabilizer quantum mechanics is the phase group. So the phase group is the set of labels that we apply to our spiders. They can easily be seen to form a group. And in the case of stabilizer quantum mechanics, the phase group is the cyclic group of order 4, which we've represented as integer multiples of pi by 2 under addition. And for the toy theory, the phase group is Z2 by Z2, so the Klein 4 group. So given that, and given the fact that in the ZX calculus, the phase group is just these labels, so that's something that's fairly easy to swap in and out. Together with my collaborator, I've developed a graphical calculus for the toy theory by basically picking some representation for the Klein 4 group, in this case, two-bit strings and the bitwise addition, and just, yeah, using those as the phase labels for the spiders. So these red and green spiders now give us a set of again, maps in the toy theory, which kind of are also maps into mutually unbiased bases in the same way that they are in stabilizer quantum mechanics. So we kind of have underlying states and a notion of orthogonality for those states, and that's what we're using here. And these yellow nodes, where I've removed the H because they're not actually Hadamards anymore, still do sort of the same thing in that they map between the two different bases. And I've shown then that the rewrite rules that do not involve the phase group are the same in the toy theory calculus as they are in the ZX calculus. So for example, this rule that's called the bi-algebra law holds in the toy theory graphical calculus as well. Obviously, the rules that do involve the phase group have to change because the phase group is now different. But I've shown that, in fact, any rules that we have in the stabilizer ZX calculus still have equivalence in the toy theory graphical calculus. So for example, here we have this rule that's called the pi commutation rule. The red pi operator is just a Pauli X, and this green operator with an arbitrary phase is an arbitrary phase gate. So this rule says that if we do a phase gate followed by Pauli X, that's the same up to scalar factor as doing first the Pauli X and then doing a phase gate with minus the original phase. And in the toy theory, we have these red 1-1 nodes, which are kind of, yeah, equivalents of the Pauli X operators. And we have a similar rule about how we can move those past phase operators of the other color, except here, rather than kind of doing the inverse, instead we're flipping the two bits. So the rules are slightly different, but they're still similar enough that we can define graph states in the toy theory graphical calculus in exactly the same way as we've defined them in stabilizer theory. And we can define local complementations. And in fact, the completeness proof for stabilizer quantum mechanics can be translated across to the toy theory. And that's what my collaborator and I have done. So it's a little bit fiddly because the rules are just different enough that kind of we needed to go through all the steps of the proof again and make sure they all still work, but they do. And so we have a complete graphical calculus for the toy bit theory. And that means that, yeah, we can analyze the toy theory in exactly the same formalism as stabilizer quantum mechanics and look at similarities and differences. And not in the graphical formalism, but in the original underlying categorical formalism, people have looked at that before and kind of shown exactly how this difference in the phase groups leads to differences, like makes stabilizer quantum mechanics non-local, whereas the toy theory is still local, and things like that. Now, finally, the completeness result for the single qubit Clifford plus T group. So this is particularly interesting because, as I said, it's an approximately universal group. And while the ZX calculus is incomplete for an exactly universal thing, this gives us hope that we can maybe show a completeness result for a multi-qubit approximately universal group as well. So in this case, it's only single qubits. But yeah, it's a start. So the single qubit Clifford plus T group consists of the single qubit Clifford operations and then this T gate, which is the square root of S. And in the ZX calculus, the T gate is a green operator with phase pi by 4. So to get the ZX calculus for the single qubit Clifford plus T group, we need to restrict our phases to be integer multiples of pi by 4. And we also need to restrict our diagrams to be line graphs. So every single node in the diagram has exactly one input and one output, which is obviously a pretty heavy restriction. But I'm working on trying to extend that to more general cases. And it turns out that in this case, I've shown that there we can actually do better than in the stabilizer case because there is a unique normal form for these single qubit Clifford plus T diagrams. And therefore, the calculus is complete because we can just rewrite any diagram into this single qubit normal form. And then if two diagrams are equal, then they will give you the same normal form directly. And so by inverting some of the rewrites, you can show that they're equal within the calculus. Now for further work. So the first thing, which I've already hinted at, is I'm working on extending the completeness results. So on the one hand, extending them to, ideally to the multi-qubit Clifford plus T group, because that's approximately universal for all pure state qubit quantum mechanics. And in this case, the calculus is probably not complete yet, so we probably will have to add new rules. But it's likely that they'll will be able to get away with adding just a finite number of new rules or a finitely generated number of new rules, unlike in the general case. So for example, this rule down here is something where it definitely should hold up to scalar factor, but I've not figured out whether I can show it from the current rules. I think probably not, but I've not managed to prove that either. But yeah, I hope that I can find kind of reasonably straightforward new rules like something like this. To add to the calculus to then make it complete. Another thing is I'm looking at putting the scalars back into the ZX calculus. So far, we've taken equality between diagrams to just be up to scalar factor. But I am now looking at what happens when we don't ignore scalars but do include them in our rewrites. And then again, I'm probably going to have to add new rewrite rules to make that all work out. But I think it should be possible to derive a completeness result for at least stabilizers at X calculus with scalars, and then hopefully later again expand that to other fragments. And that would then allow us to calculate probabilities and things like that, which we can't do in the current formalism. Another thing I'm going to do with my completeness result is I want to have a closer look at other problems in quantum information. So for example, measurement-based quantum computing, which relies quite heavily on these cluster states, which are graph states, and hence very easy to represent in the ZX calculus. And A lot of what people do when they study measurement-based quantum computing is kind of verification that the measurement patterns do exactly the thing that we want them to do. And there's this special case that people are most interested in of uniformly deterministic measurement patterns, which means measurement patterns that work independent of the actual measurement angles we've picked for any single measurement. But in the, for those measurement patterns, all the rewrites that are needed to verify them are just propagating the Pauli corrections through the underlying cluster state. So all those rewrites are just stabilizer quantum mechanics rewrites, and hence we can do them in the ZX calculus. And therefore, I think that the ZX calculus is, on the one hand, possibly just a good alternative to measurement pattern notation, which is really difficult to read and understand. And on the other hand, might also give us some new ideas for how to go about verifying things and yeah, finding new measurement patterns that are more efficient and stuff like that. I also want to look further at Speckens toy theory in this graphical formalism. So far, the graphical calculus is just for the pure fragment because the graphical calculus for quantum mechanics is also just for pure states. But I think it might be sort of an easier start towards getting mixed states into it to look at the toy theory first, just because that's generally simpler to handle than general quantum mechanics. Another thing is to look at toy theory and stabilizer quantum mechanics in higher dimension. So it's possible to construct ZX-like graphical calculi for higher dimensional underlying systems, TRIDs and qubits. And again, I think that constructing those graphical calculi, one for the toy theory and one for stabilizer quantum mechanics, would be an interesting way of studying similarities and differences between these higher dimensional theories. Last, but very much not least, I'm looking into automated graph rewriting. So there are some people in my research group in Oxford who've written this program called Quantumatic, which does automate this process of doing graph rewrites. So you kind of put a diagram in, and you put the rules in, and then it automatically identifies places where those rules can be applied. And given sort of particular strategies, you can also tell it to do specific things like simplify diagrams and things like that. And obviously, it would be really nice to implement these completeness algorithms in that program so that we can just give it two stabilizer diagrams and it can tell us whether those two are equal or not. And similarly for the single qubit Clifford plus T group implementing that rewriting algorithm, that's something I'm looking into together with Alex, who's the head developer of Quantumatic. And future results that I, completeness results, obviously, I will also try and implement in Quantumatic because that makes things so much easier. Drawing all those diagrams by hand obviously takes a long time and there's a possibility of making mistakes. But Quantumatic is built up on automated theorem provers. So it is, in fact, reasonably secure and kind of it's not going to do any wrong rewrites. And in fact, I have an example of how these rewrites work in Quantumatic. This is something that Alex made for me. So this first example is kind of showing how to propagate a measurement error through a measurement-based quantum computation. So we have a very simple cluster state down here, which consists of these green nodes with the yellow Hadamard nodes between them. And then up here we have measurements, which hopefully you can read, so alpha, beta, and gamma. And this alpha measurement here has given us the wrong result. So we have this pi error in here. And now we can just step through that in the program, and it rewrites things automatically, kind of merges the error and propagates it along. And so that tells us that the way we need to adapt our measurement pattern, if we have an error on the first measurement, then on the second measurement we have to do a measurement with minus the angle we were originally going to use, and on the next measurement we do the same measurement we were going to do before, but we interpret the result as being the opposite of what it actually is. And for an even more exciting result, so here we have a very big cluster state on which we're doing measurements, So the green measurements are just measurements in the plus minus basis. The red measurements are measurements in the computational basis. And again, up here, we have these measurements with angles alpha, beta, and gamma. And obviously, that's something that kind of, if we try to do this rewrite by hand to simplify this program, it would take forever. But using Quantumatic, we can kind of just step through it one thing at a time. And it will merge nodes and then simplify things. Yes, and in the end, we have this thing which looks very much like a quantum circuit. So yeah, in this case, the inputs are on the left side and the outputs on the right, as in quantum circuits, rather than in the way we normally write diagrams. And so this this big cluster state that we started with just corresponded to taking an arbitrary unitary on the first qubit and then doing control Z operation between the two different qubits. And yeah, Quantumatic can automatically simplify this diagram into this state. Right. Now, for the summary of my talk, so I've presented graphical languages, which give us a rigorous way of studying quantum processes, and hopefully have given you an idea of the advantages that these graphical languages offer over algebraic formalisms. I've introduced you to the ZX calculus, which is one specific graphical language, and I've shown that it is universal and sound for pure state qubit quantum mechanics. I've also shown that the ZX calculus is incomplete for general pure state quantum mechanics, but it is complete for several fragments, in particular stabilizer quantum mechanics and the single qubit Clifford plus T group. And that allows us to apply it to a range of problems, including measurement-based quantum computing and also questions in foundations of physics. And I've shown that a similar graphical calculus can be constructed for Speckens toy theory, and this other graphical calculus is also complete. Thank you.
A graph, ZX calculus style graph for the stabilizer case, does it translate? Can you reinterpret that same graph as one in the Speckens?
Not directly, because you have to you have to replace the phases with phases from Speckens Tobit theory. But I mean, by their nature, there is no unique one-to-one correspondence between the two groups, because otherwise they would be the same theory. Yeah. So if you pick some homomorphism between the Klein 4 group and the cyclic group 4 to 4, then yes, you can do that. But depending on which homomorphism you pick, you're going to get different results.
So my question was going to be, my follow-up question was going to be, if you had two graphs which are equivalent in the stabilizer theory, does that tell you something about the equivalence of two similar graphs in the Speckens?
So if you just look at graphs without local Clifford operators, then those don't involve any phases. Because you just have green nodes and Hadamard nodes between them. So there is a direct correspondence between graph states in the stabilizer theory and in the toy theory. But as soon as you go into applying local Clifford operators, then that symmetry is broken.
Any further questions? If not, then let's begin.